Well, welcome to Ask Your Ab Doctor. Here we go again, third Friday of the month. I was just thinking about it on the drive in, and I think it's 13 years. That's flashed by pretty quick. So I think we've been doing this for 13 years now. And as always, we've got some interesting information that is probably not frequently talked about, and a lot of the science and information behind it has been buried. And there is definitely a conspiracy that we are in the process of uncovering. So once again, you're listening to Ask Your Ab Doctor, KMED Garbivore, 91.1 FM. And from 7:30 till the end of the show at 8 o'clock, callers are invited to call in with any questions, either related or unrelated to this month's continuing subject of Carla Rothenberg's, Dr. Rothenberg's thesis on the estrogen industry and how the benefits of progesterone were suppressed and the cancer causing progestogens and estrogens were hidden in plain sight. And there is certainly collusion between the pharmaceutical companies, government lobbyists, Big Pharma obviously making a lot of money from estrogen sales and hormone replacement therapies, and lots of evidence and research done, as well as trials, to show that progesterone was extremely safe and was actually anti-cancer. Well, guess what, folks? It's on estrogen, and some of the estriols and some of those other compounds are on the Prop 65 list now. And this month's talk, I wanted also to include the Prop 65 information. A lot of people in California have probably been made aware of it just because the increasing notifications that are on dietary supplements and products, food products, are coming with warnings about Prop 65 components to be found within that food or that dietary supplement. And a lot of it actually is very fear-mongering, where supplement companies are doing this just to cover their backs, because the legislator and the legislature is very much moving in this kind of draconian way, very much like a complete sewn-up industry, if you like, that's basically part of a kind of one-world approach to the way we live. Dr. Pete will be joining us, and we're very pleased to have his expert knowledge. He's actually quite a professional professor, if you like, of progesterone and estrogen and other hormones, having done his dissertation on reproductive biology or his graduate studies. So we're very pleased to have Dr. Raymond Pete with you. And Dr. Pete, are you with us?
Yes, hi.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Pete. I know there'll be gaps in and out of the show this hour for the pledge drive, but can I just, wanted to get you to tell people about your professional and academic background, because there are, you know, surprisingly, some people who've never heard of you and who may have tuned in for the first time. So it's always good to give them up to speed about what you've been doing for the last 50 years.
Before I decided to study biology full time, I was a teacher of English Lit and several other subjects of painting and such. But by the time I was approaching 30, I decided to get serious and study biology, because I had been interested in it for a long time and postponed studying it because I saw that there were ulterior motives, and I didn't want to start immediately fighting the system until I had figured out more about how graduate schools work and how to find my way through a four-year program. I intended to study brain biology at first, 1968, when I enrolled as a graduate student at the University of Oregon. And very quickly, within a few weeks, I saw that my major brain biology professor was very doctrinaire and used phrases such as, "We threw out the bad evidence." And
cherry-picking, huh?
it seemed like really an ideological indoctrination program. So I looked around all the different departments and found that the other end of the organism, the reproductive people, were actually doing observational analytical science. And so I shifted from the brain concentration to the reproductive system. And very quickly, I was seeing things that they were counter to the textbook doctrines about estrogen being a fertility drug, for example. Right. And my professor, years and years before, showed that estrogen was an abortifacient. And his professor before had been one of the earliest people showing that estrogen created abortions and miscarriages. That was discovered in the 1930s. But as I started studying the metabolism of the uterus, I saw that estrogen impaired the metabolic efficiency of the uterus, making it impossible for the embryo to survive if the tissue was dominated by estrogen rather than progesterone. It was a matter of oxygen delivery to the tissue. So by finding the right professor and people to oversee my dissertation, I got through the program while contradicting all of the medical textbook opinions.
Awesome. Okay, I wanted to outline a few things, and I'll try and get through. If people wanted to contact me at any point in time, I'd be happy to pass them a PDF version of the thesis that Dr. Rothenberg wrote when she was refuting the estrogen industry's claims about how beneficial it was, and exposing how dangerous it was, and the skewed methodology used within the research. That, as you mentioned, was a very much a cherry-picking type of situation, where the good evidence, or rather the bad evidence, wasn't promoted, and only the positive things that they wanted to see came out in the papers. You've always promoted progesterone as a progestational compound, and that's very much where its name comes from. And estrogen, you've always talked about as being carcinogenic, inflammatory, promoting all those kind of weak cell states and decreased cell energy that would be associated with cancers or other inflammatory processes, where the cell's structural integrity as well as its energetic level is decreased because the compound itself is an inflammatory compound. So within Dr. Rothenberg's papers, she outlined many different instances where data was skewed, that the science was not done properly, it certainly wasn't reproducible in many instances, and that was a tenet of a lot of what was happening and should still be happening in good science, is that it should always be reproducible. You should be able to give the methodology to anybody and they should be able to reproduce the same results, and that's the basis of all good science, is that it's open and transparent. So in terms of the misnomers, I think, with the gestational hormones, you're certainly an expert in that, having done your graduate studies on these hormones and having looked at progesterone, especially as a kind of anti-aging compound. Would you say a little bit about progesterone's anti-aging effects in terms of its cell stabilizing effects or other effects that you could attribute to an anti-aging situation?
Yeah, in studying the effects of estrogen and aging on the uterus, I saw that the same changes that occurred in old animals in the uterus could be produced immediately just by overdosing them on estrogen. And my professor had previously found that a vitamin E deficiency would create the same conditions, and others had found that an excess of polyunsaturated fatty acids created very similar conditions. Vitamin E was around 1935 to 40 was known as the fertility vitamin. And some Italian researchers in the 40s called vitamin E the progesterone protective vitamin. They saw that both progesterone and vitamin E were preserving fertility, while estrogen or polyunsaturated fats were seen to create very quick miscarriage. My professor showed that at any stage of pregnancy, if you adjusted the dose of estrogen, you could create miscarriage, death of the fetus, and in animals, very often resorption rather than expulsion of the embryo, just by according to the stage of pregnancy, he would give an increased amount of estrogen, and it would kill the developing embryos.
And this may be quite interesting for women out there who are perhaps just realized they're pregnant and or who may have previously had miscarriage. I know, Dr. Pete, you are, and we've done it countless times with people, and I've seen the evidence myself. For women who are in danger of miscarrying, progesterone is certainly a savior for saving a pregnancy and preventing miscarriage until such a time as the placenta can carry on supplying the natural progesterone that is a thousandfold background levels when you're not pregnant. So that, again, that's the complete support for progesterone as supporting gestation, and what you've mentioned about estrogen actually causing abortion should make women think an awful lot about estrogen replacement therapy. I know, hopefully and rightfully so, the whole hormone replacement therapy bandwagon has been getting a good beating because of the countless women who probably have caused countless women who've probably gotten cancer from it, not to mention the bone weakening effects of estrogen. And all of these things are supposedly the exact opposite of what the industry would tell us about estrogen. So what have you got to say about progesterone supplementation during the early part of pregnancy, for example, if a woman is either high estrogen and low progesterone and is showing some kind of trauma symptoms like some spotting during the early part of pregnancy, which might precipitate a miscarriage?
In the 1930s and 40s, both thyroid hormone and progesterone were recognized as the fertility protective chemicals, and progesterone was widely prescribed to if a woman was starting to bleed during the early months of pregnancy. Just a few doses of progesterone would prevent that and make the pregnancy turn out normal, even if it wasn't continued. Thyroid was, for a long time, considered to be the main fertility chemical for both men and women. But then, in the 1940s, after the estrogen industry had created the consortium and conspiracy that Carl Rothenberg wrote about, similar things were happening to the thyroid industry, and the same companies that made estrogen were selling progesterone. And since progesterone countered the effects of estrogen, they suppressed their own promotion of progesterone and started selling something that would be compatible with their sales of estrogen. And to suppress the importance of using progesterone, I think it was 1946 or 47 that I saw the publication declare that progesterone, the natural substance, is destroyed by stomach acid. And this one mention in a medical journal had no supporting reference, no explanation. They just said stomach acid is harsh stuff and it'll destroy progesterone. But it turns out that to make progesterone, you purify the substance, including stages in which it's boiled in concentrated acid to remove the other things. Progesterone is intensely resistant to breakdown by things in the stomach, so it works fine taken orally. But they created the myth among doctors that you can't take it orally. So they sold a new chemical, which they called a progestin, that would...
It sounds like progesterone, but it wasn't.
In fact, it became a component to use with estrogen in the birth control pills because it prevents gestation.
Right. Anti-progesterogenic.
Yeah, they're anti-progestational, but they're categorized with approval of the FDA in the same category as progesterone.
Yeah.
So that has tainted the understanding of progesterone because it
Absolutely.
Is classified in the anti-progesterone class.
Yeah.
And a similar thing happened with thyroid. The synthetic products displaced the natural thyroid products, and the whole thing that thyroid creates fertility by lowering estrogen and increasing progesterone. That whole principle was suppressed and forgotten now for 70 years.
I was going to say it's unbelievable, but it's not. I get pretty hardened to these kind of situations where previously I would have just shook my head in disbelief and would have just walked off. But now so much of it makes so much sense. When you look back at the history of where we came from to where we are now, I think that's the thing with a lot of human life and experience, and where that old tenet came out that those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. And so history is so important, and a lot of people really don't know the background history, not just of the things like chemical research and where drugs came from, but even our own history. Where we came from as a people, lays a foundation for so many things that are part of our culture or part of our awareness or just part of innate knowledge. And so it's very important for people to do background reading, because unfortunately it's a little bit like the Chinese lie. When it's whispered to one person, the person at the end of the chain has a very different sentence to repeat than the person who first started the sentence. And so these small amounts of error increasingly compound so that you find something is unrecognizable sometime or some generations down the road. So what we've mentioned here briefly here, that progesterone is an extremely beneficial gestational hormone, has certainly been used to save a lot of women from getting abortion. Estrogen, which we've always been brainwashed to believe is the female hormone that females need, is actually really not very useful at all. And I kind of gotten used to quoting what I think for me helps me understand estrogen. But you tell me if this is how you would describe it, and maybe you have other terms for it. But when I tell or we're consulting with women about whether it's pregnancy or fertility or whatever it is, and whether it's stress and inflammation, and I come to the subject of estrogen, I tell them typically that it's only really useful for implantation because of the inflammation that's caused. But do you have any other kind of one sentence or one paragraph term for how you would describe estrogen?
I think that's a good description. It stimulates cell division during a period of about 12 hours once a month. It surges and dominates and is concentrated in the pituitary, the breasts, and the uterus. And it prepares those for pregnancy by creating a wave of cell division. But the function of progesterone is to come in at 100 times the concentration or even higher to knock out, destroy the progesterone or the estrogen binding chemical to destroy the influence of estrogen so that the cells stop dividing and start maturing.
Because it is totally progesterone that sustains a pregnancy, and like you said, it's 100 times or more background physiological levels that give women that glowing skin and the kind of freedom from any acne they might have had before, as well as the hair that's growing beautifully and it's silky, and the nails and everything that's flourishing and blossoming in a woman. When you look at a pregnant lady and you go, wow, she looks really healthy, she looks beautiful, that's a glow of progesterone, isn't it? Okay, so I never even mentioned the 923-3911 number or the 800 KMUD RAD number for people to call in from 7:30 on, and someone's already called in. So I think it's possibly a loyal fan, maybe. Let's just take this first caller. Call away from...
Well, I'm going to kick in and say, hey, I know there's a lot of loyal fans out there, and you want to keep Dr. Pete on the air. Our finances aren't that great. Please join KMUD and keep alternative views on the air, because you don't hear Dr. Pete anywhere else.
That's right. Well,
are we still rebroadcast this show, rebroadcast somewhere else?
You know what? Several other stations pick it up.
Awesome.
There's a lot of people posting it on YouTube now, so they'll pull it straight off the KMUD website, and they'll put it up on YouTube.
Well, wherever you are, support your local alternative media and support KMUD.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be there for you to do it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So here we are.
Okay, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from?
London, Ontario, Canada.
Uganda?
No, Canada.
Oh, Canada. I was going to say, we've never had anyone from Africa. All right, awesome. But Canada's quite a way away, too. So go ahead. What's your question?
First of all, I'd like to thank you very much for what you're doing, especially Dr. Pete, with his wisdom. He's literally saved my life, I think. And I just wanted to ask a few questions, just quick ones here.
Go ahead, yeah.
Reading his newsletter, Heart Hormones, and in there he quotes the simplicity of things such as supplementing thyroid, progesterone, sugar, avoiding excess phosphate in relation to calcium, and avoiding polysaturated fats makes it possible for people to take action without depending on the medical system. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what I had to do when I had this my heart issue. And I think it literally pulled me out of the problems I had, but I was trying to get some clarification about progesterone. How much to use? Is it a good idea to put it around the heart area? I suppose that was a little bit of a tricky thing. I don't know. But being a male,
right?
Difficult.
Yeah.
How much you would use there?
Yeah. That's one of the only caveats. But Dr. P, I'll let you answer that. Did you hear the question clearly? Or
A few words were popped out, but I think I got the point. I've used progesterone myself on and off for about 40 or 45 years, and I've found that at times only 10 milligrams per day was enough to stop my whiskers growing temporarily and act as an anti-testosterone. But other times I can take 5 or 10 milligrams, and it seems to increase my testosterone, and my whiskers don't slow down. And people have told me that they have a similar effect. Usually it's people over 55 or so who have the pro-androgen effect when they take 10 or 20 milligrams of progesterone. But if a person has, for example, heart failure, I think it's or other fairly intense things, for migraine or epilepsy, for example, I've used as much as 100 or 150 milligrams in one dose for a migraine, and it stopped it within about a minute. And you get a very sudden effect, strengthen your heart, for example, if you're having heart failure, when you take a good, strong dose like that. But it depends on the situation and your own hormone balance. You can, the same way a woman would, you can take 5 milligrams, wait 15 minutes, see if you feel the desired effect, repeat it, just keep taking 5 or 10 milligrams at a time until, for example, when I'm under stress, sometimes have bulgy veins on the backs of my hands and wrists, and either a big glass of very sweet orange juice or sugar and milk or a dollop of progesterone will make the veins tone up. And I don't have any varicose veins in my feet and so on, which I was starting to get 45 years ago. But the occasional use of progesterone has made all of the visible blood vessels in my feet disappear.
You assume you're taking them orally.
Yeah, I'm sure he's using oral form.
And the other issue is I have high calcium and high triglycerides. Is that much of a concern?
Yeah, those are produced under stress. And so keeping the intestine uninflamed, avoiding raw or undercooked vegetables and grains, for example, sometimes is all it takes. Increasing the movement through the intestine by increasing the fiber content of your food, raw carrot or cooked bamboo shoots or cooked mushrooms, for example, can lower the stress hormones by cleaning out your intestine, preventing reabsorption of estrogen and cortisol from the intestine.
Okay. The question I had was water, swelling, tension, and pain and fatigue. That's the article. In there you mentioned Oban modulates the metabolism of the heart, stimulates the you don't mention that. That was somewhere else I read. But you say darkness and hypothyroidism both reduce the activity of cytochrome oxidase, making cells more susceptible to stress, a promoter of excitotoxicity. Oban or lack of salt can function as an equivalent as darkness. So I assume this Oban, which is a Strophotus gratus, some kind of a herb, which I was thinking of using, but it's not a good thing to use.
What was the herb?
It's spelled as O-U-A-B-A-I-N.
Ubain.
Yeah.
Huh.
No, that I think that's too it's similar to digitalis, which in the right dose, it can be protective, but progesterone and DHEA are the body's natural hormone equivalents, and they don't have the risk that you run if you're taking an unmonitored Wabane or digitalis.
And then you said lack of salt. I have an issue with that. I have slight swelling in my feet, and I can eat salt to taste, but if I go any more than that, I get my blood pressure goes up a bit.
Besides, salt is just one of the things that will lower the aldosterone and that whole system that controls blood pressure. Progesterone is the body's natural antagonist to aldosterone. So progesterone and thyroid make you retain your sodium so you don't have to eat a lot of it. But vitamin D and calcium are the other very powerful controlling factors for keeping aldosterone down.
Okay, so the swelling in the feet is just basically salt not being used properly.
I didn't hear
that. Yeah, I didn't hear that either.
Swelling of the feet?
Yeah.
It's not the salt not being used properly?
Did you say the swelling of the feet is the salt not being used properly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If something is driving your aldosterone abnormally high, such as a deficiency of progesterone, then the combination of high aldosterone and high salt intake will increase your blood pressure. But when your thyroid and vitamin D and calcium intake are good, that will hold down your aldosterone. And progesterone antagonizes the effects of aldosterone. So that combination, vitamin D, calcium, thyroid, and progesterone, are the basic anti-aldosterone system and the blood pressure regulating system apart from sodium.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty much there. Oh, I do. I have high calcium according to my tests.
The high calcium level in the serum is a pretty good indication in most people that you're not eating enough calcium or not having enough vitamin D, not enough sunlight. A vitamin D deficiency will very often cause your parathyroid hormone to rise to the point that it takes calcium out of your bones and increases the serum calcium. So taking a good supplement, getting your serum vitamin D level up to 50 nanograms per 50 nanograms per milliliter, and taking in at least 1,000 milligrams of calcium per day will generally lower your serum calcium to normal by lowering the parathyroid hormone.
Okay, I was eating some eggshells and I was eating a lot of cheese, and I need to add some vitamin D then. More.
Yeah, it could be that I talk to people in Canada that have low vitamin D. I think just being that far north, you certainly get less daylight, less sun exposure than you do in more temperate regions. So vitamin D supplementation is always good to get your blood tested for vitamin D, because you may well find you've got a low level you didn't even know about.
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Well, thanks for tuning in. I'll put the number out there for people that are listening. If anybody wants to call in to ask Dr. Pete any questions about this month's subject of an ongoing situation with the promotion of estrogen at the expense of the beneficial hormone progesterone. The number here is 923-3911. That's in the 707 area code. Or if you're outside the area code, there's an 800 number, which is 1-800-568-3723, which is 1-800-KMUD-RAD. And Dr. Pete, I don't know how much we're going to get through this, but that's usually the way. There's lots and lots that I wanted to try and get done, but we'll have to do this not next month, but the month after. I wanted to get into a little bit about some of the studies that were used to put progesterone on the California Prop 65 list as a compound or agent known to the state of good old California to cause cancer. A funny thing about this whole Prop 65 list, there's 986 chemicals on the list as of January 2017. But I find the strangest part of all of it is that it only applies if the product on that list is being put in your mouth. So presumably, if you're putting something on your skin that's on the Prop 65 list, you don't actually have to worry about it either from the legislation and from the litigation. Like I said at the beginning of the show, more and more products I see on supplement shelves have this little sticker, you know, Prop 65 warning known to the state of California to cause cancer. It's just become like a little plague. If you look around the store shelves, you see bottles with all these little stickers on them, and it's all because of Prop 65. And I wanted to get into Prop 65, but obviously wanted to make sure we get as many people aware of the whole estrogen conspiracy as we can, either because they're listening to the show now or they can download this show from KMUD's website at any point after the show in the audio archive list, and also people can go to YouTube and find the same shows on YouTube and or picked up by other radio stations and other people who want to repeat this. So anyway, if we get callers, the number is 923-3911. If there's an 800 number you want to use, it's 1-800-KMUD-RAD. And don't forget, folks, you wouldn't be hearing this if it wasn't a free radio station, perhaps. I think some of the things that are bought out on this radio station, not my program, but other programs, are definitely alternative. And we've got to live in an alternative world that has alternatives available to people. Otherwise, it becomes a complete dominated system where there is no choice. And I think more so than ever, the medical industry is recognizing the both the power in the actuality of results, as well as a financial control that natural products have. You know, it's a huge multi-billion-dollar market, and that's because people are just tired of being given one alternative, which is the chemical, which is the product that gets pulled off the shelf, you know, 2 or 3 years later after it's killed a lot of people. And there's just more and more and more chemicals being added to the list every day that we have no idea really what they're doing. They've not been tested properly. To the fact that they've gone through clinical trials really doesn't mean that much, because when you look at the results, and this is what we're talking about with the whole mistake of putting progesterone on the Cal Prop 65 list, is that the research really has not been done. And you know, parts of it have been skewed and buried in favor of promoting something that drug industries are very keen to maintain the status quo of. So I wanted just to break out a little bit, Dr. P, about, because this is another specialism of yours, the subject of vegetable oils, that the spontaneous cancers they've shown increase in proportion to the quantity of polyunsaturated fat, especially linoleic acid, in the diet. And by the end of the 60s, the carcinogenicity of vegetable oils, or at least their co-carcinogenicity or tumor-promoting effects, have become widely known. And one of the World Health Organization's own publications observed that progesterone carcinogenicity studies using vegetable oil as the carrier couldn't be recognized as valid. And they were using, and they may well still do, using sesame oil, peanut oil, corn oil. And then they turned to cyclodextrin, which had its own problems. Throughout the paper, Carla Rothenberg points out the fact that there was this kind of tumorigenesis, injection site inflammation that was occurring because of the localized inflammatory and pro-carcinogenic effects of the vegetable oils. I know you've spoken for decades about the dangers of liquid oils and how thyroid suppressive they are, but obviously they obviously have another directly carcinogenic effect too.
It was around 1970 when it was finally becoming too public that linoleic acid was carcinogenic to keep promoting it as the heart protective fat, because it caused heart disease as well as cancer. And that was when the fish oil industry, the Environmental Protection Agency, was pressuring them to stop polluting, throwing fish fat and fish heads and fish skins in the coastal waters and nearby landfills. And the carcinogenicity of the vegetable oils was an opportunity for them to say, well, here's another essential fatty acid, so-called, that isn't linoleic acid. So that whole promotion of the fish oils as the alternative, supposedly less carcinogenic essential fatty acid, grew up. But the around 1970 was a turning point for the essential fat mythology and for the estrogen progesterone industries. Carla Rothenberg points out some of the main phases of conspiracy. For example, in the 1940s, it was the George and Olive Smith professors at Harvard who promoted the DES use during pregnancy and created the epidemic of cervical cancer in the daughters of the women who had it, and even in the granddaughters of those women. Yeah. Then the birth control industry created a new definition of the progestins, and progesterone was identified with the anti-progestins used in contraception. And in the 1960s, the three major estrogen industries, in total, they gave $1.3 million, which in 1960s was a lot of money, to Robert Wilson and his foundation. He wrote Feminine Forever, a book really just an accumulation of lying claims that estrogen keeps you young and that menopause consists of the loss of estrogen, when in fact the first signs of menopause involve the failure to produce the surge of progesterone at around ovulation, leaving estrogen unopposed. So the onset of menopause really is the onset of estrogen dominance.
Yeah. Let me hold you there for a second, Dr. P, because we do have another caller on the air. I want to make sure they get their question into you. Okay, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? Hi, you're on the air. Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm Stephen. I'm local here.
Okay.
And, it's just interesting to hear. I like your guys' show, and I'm always, Yeah, I think it's really good to tell people about the history of how the whole birth control pills and how that became an issue. You're covering it really well, and I hope that at some point you'll go into the what do they call that, cryptoestrogenic effects and things like fire retardants and stuff like that. But,
yeah, we've definitely done programs on it, on bisphenol A and the plasticizers.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. We've definitely covered.
I can barely hear you. But.
Okay, yeah, we've definitely covered things like bisphenol A and environmental estrogen mimics that certainly have that estrogen and hormone disrupting effect.
Oh, okay. Well, I probably missed that point then. All right, well, I'll let you go then because I got a bad connection. But thank you. Thank you for presenting this information.
Okay,
really,
you're welcome.
Like the show. Take care.
Yep, that's what it's all about.
Following the support for Robert Wilson's book, there was a huge increase in sales of progesterone, such as Premarin and other, not progesterone, of estrogen and Premarin especially. Yep. The number of prescriptions for estrogens between 1970 and 75 quadrupled, largely because of that promotion of Robert Wilson's phony claims about estrogen preserving youth. And the consequence of that tremendous surge between 1970 and 76, in those years, the incidence of metastatic breast cancer in very young women between the ages of 25 and 39 began to increase steadily every year, and by the year 2009, that age group had experienced a threefold increase in metastatic breast cancer. Other things, environmental estrogens and obesity and other things probably contributed to it, but that great surge of the use of estrogen was probably the main cause, and we're still seeing the drastic increase of metastatic cancer in young women where it never used to occur. Mm-hmm. And in the 1930s and 40s, animal experimenters were seeing that estrogen is not only carcinogenic to the uterus and breast, but the next most sensitive tissue is the lung. The kidneys and brain and other organs are also caused to develop tumors and then cancer, but the lungs are the next most sensitive. And if you look at the incidence of lung cancer in men, it was dropping off by the 1970s when women were starting to use more estrogen. And the female incidence of lung cancer took off at the same time breast cancer in young women took off. And the curve is very similar for lung cancer and young women's metastatic breast cancer. And it has continued to rise. Rising more slowly in the last 10 years, but still it shows that tremendous increase in exposure to estrogens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's all part of the reason for doing this show and on this subject and other subjects. It's just to make people aware that, as we've always said, you know, the truth is out there if you're just willing to open your eyes, not stare at the TV, go get your head in some research and start looking at it yourself. You'll soon find there's plenty of patterns out there for people to live a better life and avoid those things that they've been told are good for them, and to start listening to people like you who are espousing the truth from a point of altruism, you know, and just crying out from the top of the hills. Well, Dr. Pete, listen, I've got a few other things I want to make people aware of, and it is 8 minutes to eight here, so we probably better wrap this show up for tonight, but I do thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so for people that have either called in tonight or have just listened to the show, Dr. Raymond Pete, he's been He's been working on this kind of thing for 40 plus years, and he's certainly published a lot of reports, and he's written several books. He's written hundreds and hundreds of newsletters, and they're all fully referenced. And he's not in the process of selling you anything. So he's very much an altruistic type researcher who, having gone through the whole process of brainwashing, if you like, from the industry that was controlled, realized that there was a lot of problems within the academic institutions to maintain the role and the job by the professor. He had to defend this or that and had to take a positive stance towards, you know, chemical companies, etc., if he was doing research or microbiology using certain chemicals. And so the whole indoctrination of education leads us to where we are now, where we are told what we're told by vested interests. And so never underestimate the powers that are at work in the world, you know, are not necessarily looking at your best interests. So it's always good to find out impartial third-party advice, and definitely to look at research articles yourself that will spell out clearly what's been done. And you can certainly, without too much science, see the truth out there. It's not difficult. You really just have to go look for it. But anyway, that's what this program is all about, is just bringing some of these subjects to light so that in layman's terms we can turn people on to what it is we're saying, and then you can go elsewhere and find more information out about it. Well, I think we've probably gotten to the end of the estrogen progesterone debate, but I really wanted to bring out the whole California Prop 65 subject. It's a fairly big subject, and unfortunately it's got a lot of twists and curves, and it's a big old rabbit hole with things, like I said at the beginning of the show, that they're on the Prop 65 list, but if you don't put it in your mouth, it doesn't have to be adhered to. You know, you can find these things on the shelves, and nothing has to be said about it. But what I'm telling you now is that you will find an increasing amount of litigation as we move forward in time, and you know, the chips come down. You'll certainly start to see more and more of a push towards providing litigation services and lawsuits against companies that are putting products, whether they're natural or chemical products, into a container that is to be used for food, that where the compound is a Prop 65 compound. I just wanted to quickly tell you some of the Prop 65 compounds that you may or may not know are on the list. Aspirin. For those of you who want to avoid the liver toxic ibuprofen, aspirin is a known anti-cancer substance, and it's very inexpensive to make, and it's not patentable. Now, ethanol in alcoholic beverages, for those who enjoy cold beer or a glass of wine or tequila at the end of the workday, it's got many positive benefits in moderation, but it's on the Prop 65 list. Now, how about wood dust? It's also listed for all of you creative woodworkers out there. Then there's marijuana smoke. For those who like to partake, how about that, folks? Marijuana smoke is on the Prop 65 list. Is this the smoke from burning the herb, or probably why the industry is busily promoting vaping and oil production? It's another way to own the rights, so you lose your freedom. And for you seafood lovers, arsenic and methyl mercury is there too. And I'll discuss this, I think, in 2 months' time. It's probably the most relevant but untackled area of Prop 65 legislation. So you see, there's something for everyone on the list, and now we're run by legislators and litigators. There's little to stop draconian enforcement. Oh, and don't say I didn't warn you. You get what you ask for when you give up your rights to self-determine. Now, we discussed the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and the Declaration of Independence, oh, some time back, as a blueprint to avoid overreaching government when America was formed. But Big Brother's coming. And from the end of World War II and the Codex Alimentarius that was drawn up by the Rothschilds, the Bilderbergers, and Rockefellers, the plan was for a new world order and centralized one world government, a totalitarian system. And if you think that sounds good, you should move to North Korea or China and see how you like it, rather than being complicit and ignorant of what you're demanding here by voting for the government to keep you safe. Well, like I said, Dr. Raymond Peets and all that he works for and all that he publishes is freely available on his website, www.raypeets.com. We can also be reached toll-free Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, WBM-ERB, 1-888-WBM-ERB. And just to let you guys know as a heads up, we won't be doing the show in August, but we'll be back in September. So we'll be back at the dawning end of the summer, and we've barely just got through the middle of summer here to July the 21st, 2017. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in 2 months. Good night.